Deputy AG Monaco went out there. She gave a speech where, number one, she announced that the Justice Department will now be implementing its own whistleblower awards program. And then number two, she also talked a bit about the risks of artificial intelligence and how the Justice Department is now going to start looking more closely at your company's ability to manage AI-related risks when they are evaluating your compliance program.
That was Matt Kelly. This is Tom Fox, and I'd like to welcome you to the award-winning Compliance Into the Weeds. This week, Matt and I take a deep dive into a recent speech by Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco, where she announced two new initiatives. Number one, a Department of Justice whistleblower bounty program, and number two, changes to the ECCP to incorporate AI into the compliance remit. First, we're going to have a word from our sponsor, Ethico.
Navigating the complexities of compliance data security and accessibility is a daunting task. Ethico makes it effortless with real-time permissions control. This feature ensures that sensitive information is both secure and accessible while balancing confidentiality with efficiency. It's about creating a fortress around your data while keeping the gates flexible for those who need access. Discover a solution where security meets agility. Step into a world of controlled freedom with Ethico. Learn about reshaping your data security at ethico.com/CPN. Book a demo, download our white paper by Tom Fox, The ROI of Compliance, and try our free ROI calculator to start a new chapter in ethics and compliance management.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox back again with Matt Kelly for another episode of the award-winning Compliance Into the Weeds. Welcome back, Matt.
Hello, Tom. Good to be here, as always.
Matt, the ABA annual or semi-annual white-collar conference appears to be a place now where major speeches are made around or from the Department of Justice and Lisa Monaco specifically. We had another speech from Deputy Attorney General Monaco last week that I thought maybe we could take a deep dive into. You want to kind of set the stage for us?
Well, sure, yes. Congratulations to the ABA's white-collar group for having what seems to be a very newsworthy annual meeting last week, or a semi-annual. I don't know how often they have them, but they are worth keeping an eye on them whenever they happen. So Deputy AG Monaco went out there. She gave a speech where, number one, she announced that the Justice Department will now be implementing its own whistleblower awards program, much like the other whistleblower awards programs that are floating around the federal government these days. And then number two, she also talked a bit about the risks of artificial intelligence and how the Justice Department is now supposedly going to start looking more closely at your company's ability to manage AI-related risks when they are evaluating your compliance program. I do have a lot of thoughts and questions about that in particular. There were other speeches from other DOJ people talking about effective compliance programs, dissecting some recent enforcement actions, a whole lot of stuff. But Deputy AG Monaco, I think, definitely was the headliner and gave us some very interesting news to discuss here.
So, Matt, on the whistleblower program, perhaps we could start with that. I found it really interesting that, if I can find that, that there are three areas that they're especially interested in: criminal abuses of the U.S. financial system, foreign corruption cases outside the jurisdiction of the SEC, including both the FCPA and the FEPA, as well as domestic corruption cases, TAM, and lawsuits which could be brought under jurisdiction of the IRS, Securities and Exchange Commission, and the CFTC, who already have whistleblower programs, are going to be exempted out. Additionally, there are going to be some requirements which were listed as only after victims have been properly compensated, only to those who submit truthful information not already known to the government, only those not involved in the criminal activity itself. That's not any criminal activity, it's the criminal activity, and only in cases where there's not an existing financial disclosure incentive. Is there anything sort of in that quick run through I went that either surprised you or made you perhaps take a second look?
Well, I think the most important thing for compliance officers to think about here as we listen to this announcement and think about what this program means is I struggle to understand exactly how big and significant this news is. It is not insignificant, but dealing with whistleblower award programs is now nothing compliance officers have not encountered before, especially if you are at large publicly traded companies. But there are many other regulatory agencies that already have these programs. The SEC is one. If you take Medicare or Medicaid dollars or government funding dollars, those could be covered in QI-TAM lawsuits. So that's another area. It almost seemed to me that the Justice Department is climbing on the bandwagon, but the bandwagon is pretty big and crowded already. And then they have these constraints that really rather narrowly tailor exactly who could be eligible for the Justice Department program. So if you are reporting on anything to the DOJ that could be covered by another program, I presume the Justice Department would then say, no, you're not eligible for our awards. Please go call the IRS, the SEC, the CFTC, go call somebody else, not us, but they're going to be sending people away to some other programs, that the government doesn't already know about the existing misconduct. So that's always, I think, tricky for whistleblowers. On the other hand, I suppose more is always better if you are a whistleblower and you are looking for protection. Tom, one thing that I didn't see yet, and Lisa Monaco did say that they are going to begin a 90-day sprint to figure out the policies and procedures for this program. So maybe this has yet to be announced, but I'm not clear on exactly what the awards are. Like in a Dodd-Frank whistleblower award, you are allowed 10 to 30% of whatever settlement the SEC might get over $1 million. So is that going to be the range for a DOJ enforcement action? I know that the Attorney General already has discretion to give out awards. And in fact, Lisa Monaco actually talked about how this goes all the way back to the 1800s, where the U.S. Marshals would hang up wanted, dead or alive kind of posters or reward posters for, I don't know, I guess Billy the Kid or other outlaws back in the day. The authority to give these awards descends from that authority. So, yes, the AG can do this. But I don't know what the limits or range of the potential awards are. I don't know about the review process for this. If we're going to use the SEC's pace of giving out whistleblower awards as a benchmark, it's going to take a long time. It doesn't take as long for the SEC as it used to, which used to be years and years and years. Now I think it's just years. But I will be curious to see what are the mechanics that have to happen here for the DOJ to issue these awards? How big are they? And, that would have some effect on what a whistleblower and his or her lawyers would think about this. And then, Tom, my other big question is, I am not clear on whether compliance officers themselves would be eligible to participate in this program or under what circumstances they could participate. Ms. Monaco did not seem to really clarify that all that much.
So I agree with all of those. My hope is that they're fleshed out a little bit more when the policy is released. I guess the things I would highlight, number one, the amount, which you highlighted. Two, though, that you highlighted that the SEC, for instance, has moved from years and years and years to release a whistleblower award to simply years. And I think one of the biggest criticisms I have come across from the whistleblowing bar is simply that, the length of time it takes to get an award through. Now, that's under the Dodd-Frank program. But if we look at Gunvar, for instance, say someone had come forward with that information, that investigation into oil traders started in 2017. And here in 2024, it's finally when we have a fine and penalty assessed to Gunvor. So I think it's only going to be longer, particularly under foreign corruption cases, where the DOJ routinely deals with foreign governments and multilateral or mutual legal assistance treaties and other things that seem to slow down the overall investigation. I guess some of the other questions I have is, there's obviously a whistleblower bar who help whistleblowers, particularly around the CFTC, the SEC, and the IRS. Those lawyers tend to have subject matter expertise, particularly the SEC whistleblower lawyers in SEC regulation, jurisdiction, and law. I wonder if that is going to translate over to FCPA or FIPA cases, or they'll really need to go to a whistleblower who's a little more steeped in FCPA law, number one. Number two, FIPA, as we have talked about in this podcast, still seems to be a bit of an open book. We haven't gotten a lot of guidance from the Department of Justice, so it's unclear how that might be enforced, given the difficulties in a FIPA prosecution going forward. So I think there's a lot to flesh out, but the quantum of award, up to 30% perhaps, or the length of time, I think are going to be big questions, particularly for the whistleblower bar. And then maybe a little bit further down is what subject matter expertise do you really need to bring forward a whistleblower under the FCPA, given the lack or really small amount of court cases that there are to interpret in this arena.
I think that is all true. And then I think that for compliance officers in particular, wondering about how does this additional program affect your internal reporting function and your ability to deal with internal whistleblowers? Like, I guess the fair question to ask here is, who cares? Because you already have all of these internal whistleblower risks and the risks that they might go from internal to, I'm just going to go run off to my regulator instead and short circuit the company. That's not new. That compliance officers have had to deal with that tug of war now for the better part of a decade, if not longer. So I think a lot of the mechanics of what you do to keep a would-be whistleblower in the family, where they bring their concerns to you first so you can work with them and then perhaps self-disclose the misconduct together, how you could protect the whistleblower. All of that you had to do was true last week before we had this whistleblower program. It remains true today and will be true tomorrow after the DOJ has this whistleblower program. So other than the very personal question of, can I, a compliance officer, participate in this DOJ program, which we don't know yet, although my gut is you probably can. Other than that, I am not sure that this has that much direct impact on how you would actually run an internal compliance program. All the pressures that were there before, they're still here and have not changed because of this.
I guess the only thing that I would add to that, Matt, is it will put additional pressure on a self-disclosure. Deputy Attorney General Monaco re-emphasized the department's desire to have self-disclosure, and that really all incentives from DOJ programs, whether it be declinations or up to 75% discount, start with a voluntary self-disclosure. So I think there's probably going to be more pressure on the decision now to self-disclose or not. And once you make that decision to self-disclose, the kimono's open on everything, not just perhaps the matter you have investigated and you think you need to self-disclose about. And I don't know if this is going to inundate or bring more cases to the Department of Justice. There was a statistic of over 50% more voluntary disclosures to the DOJ in 2023 than 2021, number one. And I think the SEC whistleblower program has had a equally large, perhaps not quite as large, increase. The other thing that I did not know from that I learned in the Monaco speech, I knew there was a voluntary disclosure program for individuals in the Southern District of New York, but I did not know there was one in the Northern District of California. And so I don't know if the DOJ will lean on either one of those voluntary disclosure programs, although they're largely focused for individuals. It's still a voluntary disclosure and you have to come forward. So I just think it's going to put more pressure on that decision to voluntarily self-disclose or not, because if you decide not to, and Mike Volkoff often will advocate, remediate, clean it up, and document everything, and not self-disclose, so that if the regulators come in, you can show them what you've done. But if someone self-discloses, they're going to come in with a perhaps more jaundiced eye than they would.
But Tom, I would just add that all of this thought and pressure about should we self-disclose or not, that all presumes that you have the choice to self-disclose. But if the whistleblower has decided they're not going to tell the company at all that what I know, and I'm just going to skip all of that and go directly to the regulator, whether that's the SEC, the Justice Department, or anybody else, once the regulator already knows, you can decide whatever you want. You're not going to get the self-disclosure credit. So all of this presupposes that you have a whistleblower who is reporting something internally, and they're giving you some time to figure out what you, the company, want to do. I'm not necessarily sure that happens or how often that might happen, but this is going to be yet another potential avenue for an employee who does know something to say, I'm not going to tell the company at all. I'm just going to go straight to the regulator. And then, you know, as I said, you can debate what you want to do with self-disclosure all you like. You're not going to get any credit for it because the whistleblower already told the regulator and they already know it. So yet you're right that yet again, this is just more pressure around all of these issues of self-disclosure.
I guess that would advocate for having a greater system of controls that would pick something up. There was a second part to Deputy Attorney General Monaco's speech that was, if not as interesting or equally interesting, I thought very interesting. That was around AI.
Yes.
You want to set the stage on that part?
Well, the stage is that Deputy AG Monaco got up in her speech and said that the Justice Department, like every other regulator within the United States and probably on the planet, is now thinking more about the risks of artificial intelligence and how it might be misused. So in particular, they want to pay more attention to the risks of AI being improperly used to commit corporate crime. And they are going to, when they encounter instances of AI being used to commit corporate crime, they're going to be seeking greater penalties against either the individual or the company. And this is the big one, they're going to incorporate assessments of disruptive technology risks, quote unquote, including risks associated with AI, but they're going to include questions about that in, I guess, some forthcoming updated evaluation guidance on the evaluation of corporate compliance programs, the guidelines that we all talk about now for several years. So they're going to put AI risks in there, I guess, in the same sort of vein as when they added new material about ephemeral messaging and off-channel messaging apps, and how is the company trying to manage the threat of that? Now, take that idea and just substitute AI. We're going to have questions about how you, the company, are managing the risks around AI. I have not seen any updated guidance yet. My impression, Tom, is that this is forthcoming. I don't think they've actually published updated guidance as of Friday or over the weekend when I was looking around. But I do have a lot of questions about how this is going to work in practice, and we can get into those, but that's the headline.
Well, I would like to get into those because it seemed to me a couple of things. Number one, there's going to be a potentially enhanced criminal penalties if AI is used to commit any crime. Two, this is going to require, I think, some thoughtful guidance from the Department of Justice, and there's a new initiative called Justice AI, where Deputy Attorney General Monaco said that the Department of Justice would be consulting with practitioners, tech companies, and, quote, civil society, end quote, whoever civil society may be, to help craft these policies. So I think they are struggling with this maybe as much as we in the private sector are, or companies in the private sector are doing. But whatever it is that has them excited about this, it seems to be they are very much excited about it.
Well, Tom, first off, as to who is civil society, obviously, of course, I hope it's you and me, and maybe we'll get involved in this. I don't know. Justice Department is listening. I am, of course, willing to serve. But here's my question, thinking this more from a anti-fraud and technology perspective, if we're going to look at greater penalties for AI-enhanced fraud, what is the difference between an AI-enhanced fraud and other tech-enhanced frauds? Like, why don't we have penalties for spreadsheet-enhanced frauds? Because as soon as you say it, that sounds ridiculous. What is it specifically about AI that is going to be so problematic it needs some special treatment? And I am not sure that is clear. Now, I can think of some specific abuses of AI, such as deepfake videos or voice cloning. Sure, that is fraud or misconduct that is only generated by AI. Spreadsheets cannot generate deepfake videos. I get it there, but I'm not quite sure what other sorts of AI-induced fraud might actually exist that are so different that they need a special treatment. Are you going to be using AI to analyze trading records to be able to figure out how to, commit insider trading of some kind or to do market manipulation schemes? Because you could do spreadsheets for that. It would probably take you a long time, but it's technically possible. What about maybe AI being used to alter the documentation that somebody uses to show if you're a customer at a financial services firm and you are in fact a terrorist, but you are presenting documentation that AI altered, so it looks like you are Joe Schmo, John Q. Public, perfectly fine, normal citizen. Okay, I can see it there that maybe the individual would be prosecuted to some extra degree. But I still think we need some clarity around exactly what AI-enhanced frauds we're talking about. I also am curious now, like, let's walk this through, because Ms. Monaco actually said that they would incorporate an assessment of disruptive technology risks into their guidelines on evaluating compliance programs. So how we're using AI as corporations, that's really a question of technology governance. Are we now saying that a company's ability to govern new technology adoption is part of its ethics and compliance program? I am not opposed to that idea. I think it's a great in theory, but in practice, I am not sure that a lot of chief compliance officers have the authority to intercede on those sorts of issues. Are we really going to have the CCO barge into a strategic investment meeting that senior management's having and say, no, we're not going to use AI yet because we don't know how to protect against its potential abuses? So that would be an ineffective compliance program. I'm not going to have that around my neck. I don't think we should use this. So are they going to have like fights with the chief technology officer over this? Or what about when employees are using AI that is delivered by a third-party cloud provider for like $9.95 a month, which is certainly going to be coming soon enough? There's a lot of questions that I have about how would this work in practice. For I don't know that a lot of chief compliance officers have the stature or even maybe the sophistication to know what good technology governance is going to look like here.
You know, Matt, that's a great point, and it made me think about the chief technology officer. When would a chief technology officer know, oh, this has now risen to the level I need to call compliance? It is something more than what we had. It's something more innovative. Is it something that rises to the level of true disruptor like AI, or is it something less that I can manage as a CISO or a CTA or CTO rather? So lots of very, very good questions there that it's going to be interesting to see what the Department of Justice might tell us about this. But I think it's going to open up, as you say, a corporate can of governance worms for us all.
And Tom, I would just add that for a lot of compliance officers who may be quietly panicking or wondering, where do I find guidance about how we should be governing AI? In my humble opinion, the Federal Trade Commission is running laps around the Justice Department on what good technology governance should be. And they are doing this more in the form of enforcement actions about improper use of AI. They have had several. We've discussed them, I think, on this podcast before, where the FTC's orders, if you look at them as a neutral party and just think, okay, how would I, as a compliance officer, avoid what this other company has just been nailed for? Well, a lot of it is going to revolve around good governance over the data that a large learning language model would use, that the AI would use to learn. Good governance over how you are observing the AI's results. How are you testing its results? How are you training employees on how to use the AI and how to spot defective AI? So in particular, I think it was in December, the Federal Trade Commission sanctioned Rite Aid for facial recognition technology it was using in some very loose ways that rubbed the FTC the wrong way. But if you're looking for guidance and practical examples of how would I get into hot water with a regulator that might cost my company money, the Federal Trade Commission is the one to look at. The Justice Department is talking an interesting game, but there are still so many hurdles and questions between their very thoughtful, abstract goals that Ms. Monaco said to actual programs and guidance and evaluation questions that prosecutors might ask. The gulf between those two things is still large. It is not large with the Federal Trade Commission. So that's one place you could look to for actual inspiration of what am I supposed to do here?
That seems like a great place for us to end this episode. I can't wait to see what next week brings us.
Thank you, Tom.
This is Tom Fox again. As I mentioned at the start of this podcast, our sponsor for the Compliance Podcast Network this month is Ethoco. Have you ever struggled with the ROI of your compliance program? Have you struggled with how to present your compliance program budget request to your chief financial officer? Well, I paired with Ethoco to help you in both of those. Ethoco has created an ROI compliance calculator, and I've written a white paper on the ROI of compliance. You can get those by going to the website listed on the show notes. I hope you will check it out. I hope you will use it, and I hope you will let us know whether it helped you or not. I'd like to tell you about the newest addition to the Compliance Podcast Network, the Compliance Tip of the Day. In this, I give a quick 5-minute tip of the day that you can use for your compliance program going forward. Check it out on the Compliance Podcast Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.